Do you have repair projects that you've been putting off, whether it's basement waterproofing, concrete raising, structural repairs, or attic insulation? PermaSeal provides quality work and free inspections. Don't wait. Call PermaSeal 800-421-7325 or permaseal.net.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Paul Listening Behind the Curtain, our opportunity to take an in-depth look at the worlds of theater and the arts in Chicago. Today, a really significant approach here to an interesting venue in the city. The Lyric Opera of Chicago is, of course, classic location. And when I say that, if you are not an opera fan, you're going, I'm not an opera fan. I don't want to hear about opera. Well, don't go anywhere because you are about to learn about some things that I learned about the Lyric Opera that will blow your mind away. Joining me is the general director, president, and CEO. Man, you got all the titles of Lyric Opera of Chicago, John Mangum. Thank you, John, for being with me. You're an important guy and I appreciate your time.
Oh, it's great to be with you, Paul. Thanks so much.
So now you are only the fifth, president CEO of Lyric Opera in its history.
I am.
And I know you just spent several years in Houston as well.
Yeah, just got to Chicago last fall. So, you know, about to hit my 1 year anniversary here at Lyric and loving every minute of it.
Congratulations. So now I'm going to start by admitting my lack of class, okay? No sense in lying. I'm not an opera guy. And I wish I were. I try to think of myself as classy. I own a tuxedo. There's every reason in the world I should go to the opera, but it's a tough thing for me. Now, I do want to talk to you a little bit about why people should give opera a chance, because it's not the opera of 1800, but that's not the purpose of our discussion today. Today, the reason I wanted you on was because Lyric is doing some incredibly cool things that are bringing me to the opera house, I guarantee it. One thing that you have been doing for the last period of years, there's been kind of a Broadway show for several seasons, West Side Story, Fiddler on the Roof. Those were amazing moments. Am I right in assuming, John, that you and the Lyric kind of get the sense, look, not everybody's into opera and we need to bring everybody to the Lyric Opera House?
I mean, really, the way we think of it is we're in the business of musical storytelling. And whether that's an opera or a Broadway musical, they're accomplishing the same thing. And so I think that's sort of at the root of why we have done and will continue to do music theater here at the Lyric Opera House on into the future, because these are great stories. The music is incredible, and they very much feel like kind of almost America's version of popular operas, you know, that you see in Italy in the 19th century, for example. You know, everybody knew the songs from Verdi's operas, and everybody knows the songs from these great Broadway musicals. So there's no reason not to do them. They're absolutely incredible, and they bring new people into the opera house, which is really important to us.
Yeah, but and you expand as well, because what you're doing this year is you are, and you did do this before, you did last season with Singing in the Rain, but you bring in a classic film. And yet the music track, I will say the soundtrack from the film itself is removed. We get the lyrics, we get the, you know, we get the talking, but we don't get any of the music. Tell us how it is that we sitting in the Lyric Opera House will enjoy that movie like we're in it.
We're doing a couple of films this coming season. So we're doing the Disney Pixar film Coco, and we're doing that classic Disney musical that everybody knows and loves, Mary Poppins.
My favorite.
You know, so just take Mary Poppins as an example. Just like you said, the orchestra part of the soundtrack is removed, but you still hear Julie Andrews and Dick Van Dyke and all the wonderful singing and the door shutting and the Foley art, all that kind of stuff is in there. But the orchestra part is played live by the Lyric Opera Orchestra. And so we hang a gigantic screen in the proscenium of the Lyric Opera House. The Lyric Opera Orchestra is on stage with a conductor, and they play that music live for the audience. So it's, you know, it's a beautiful print of the film. It's shown on a bigger screen than you're ever going to get in any movie house anywhere else. And you have our full orchestra playing live. So you get that live music experience, but with a classic movie musical that you know and love and that you can bring your family to. You know, all the kids want to come see Coco, and the parents and grandparents want to introduce the kids to Mary Poppins. So it's just a really nice mix of all these wonderful things that we've got going on with those movie performances.
I'm just going to put a little button on that, because people may be thinking, oh, okay, so when Julie Andrews sings Supercalifragilistic, the orchestra chimes in. It's more than that. It's the music track throughout the entire film. All those things you might not even pay attention to.
That's right. I mean, the orchestra is playing for two and a half hours straight. It's really incredible. And, you know, there's a difference between hearing a soundtrack on a playback of a movie and having the live orchestra. The sound just washes over you, envelops you. You feel surrounded by it. And it's a completely different sort of immersive experience.
How do they do it? I mean, I have seen several of these, but just explain for our viewers. I mean, they have computer. I see everybody with their iPads or whatever is in front of them. I mean, because you can't miss a beat. You can't be off two notes. The whole soundtrack would be thrown off.
It's really sophisticated. So for a concert or an opera, the conductor's there. He or she has the score open in front of them and they conduct. For these movies, they've got a setup in front of them. It looks like they're at NORAD. They've got three or four screens and, you know, they've got the score and they've got lights and things blinking at them. But really, it's a system that they are looking at their score. So they're printed sheet music. They've got screens that have the movie playback on them. And one of the screens has what are called punches. And so these are kind of circular light flashes that show the conductor when you really have to line something up in the music with an effect in the movie. So, you know, if something crashes in the movie and you've got to have a big chord from the orchestra, you'll get a punch on that screen. And then there's another screen that has what are called streamers, and that's just a line moving across. And the lines move across and tell the conductor how to do their beat so that each beat aligns with the line as it moves across. So it's another tool to help the conductor keep the orchestra together with the movie. And again, this might be Supercalifragilistic is a great example. It's a really fast song. And if the orchestra gets out of sync with Julie Andrews' vocal track, it's going to sound like a train wreck. So you've really got to keep that in the groove. And that tool helps the conductor do that. And then usually there's a screen with a clock, and there might be some timings written in the score so that, again, when the conductor looks at his or her music, they see, oh, okay, at 3:47, I'm supposed to have the woodwinds come in because a bird is going to fly on screen or whatever it might be. So it's really intricate, and they have all these different things arrayed in front of them to make sure that the orchestra, that they're keeping the orchestra together with what you're seeing on the screen.
I know when performers are on stage, they often wear earpieces, something, because they don't hear it like we do. So if something is off, they might not even know it. But so your conductor, the musicians, is it really the cues they're getting on the screen that's telling them, no, you're good? Or do any of them hear earpieces? And so no, they what we hear.
That's a great question, because actually for some of the movies, the ones with really intricate alignment between the orchestra and the screen, the orchestra will have these in-ear monitors like you're describing, and there's what's called a click track. So it's, you know, anybody who sat through music lessons as a kid might have had a metronome. It clicks like a metronome to make sure that the musicians have the right tempo. So they're seeing the conductor. The conductor has the punches, the streamers, and the clock, and the musicians have the click track. And so, you know, all of this keeps it all together.
And by the way, people can go to the website, lyricopera.org. Coco, it's coming in October, which is going to be here sooner than you think. And although Mary Poppins is not here till April, I'm going to be honest with you. I actually went on the website, John. They're selling. People are already on top of those movies. This is great family fun. They're amazing. I've had the experience. They're great. You did Singing in the Rain this last season. I love it. And there's an intermission halfway through, so I think that's probably part of the track that you get, but it gives people a chance to go out, have a drink, and just relax for a little bit too.
Yeah, exactly. We want to make it as easygoing as possible. And don't worry, you can leave your tuxedo at home. Just wear whatever you're comfortable in.
Okay, I did. But that's not all that's really cool and new going on. I do want to talk about the opening concert, the gala that you have. That's October 10th, so that's before Coco, but it is coming up. Brian Stokes, Mitchell, and Laura Benanti. Wow. Talk about that event.
Yeah, these are two Broadway legends. Both are Tony Award winners. Brian Stokes Mitchell has also been honored with a sort of lifetime achievement Tony. You know, they've been in the business and been in so many prominent shows. I first encountered Brian Stokes Mitchell way back in my career when I worked at the Hollywood Bowl out in Los Angeles, and he came and did a show with the orchestra there, which was absolutely amazing. And, you know, even all these years later, he's still at the top of his game and is just a great performing artist and so generous with the audience and with the music that he sings. And Laura Benanti, she's, again, incredible. I met her in New York. She came to the New York Philharmonic to do a Sondheim birthday gala that we put together. And you know, somebody whose career I followed avidly since that encounter, including she's appearing in this HBO show, The Gilded Age, right now. So, you know, that's something that a lot of people follow. The whole second season is about an opera war. So in the opera world, it's a big, you know, when opera makes it to HBO, we get very excited.
Yeah, exactly. Now, are they performing together or is
it performing
him, then her?
Together? And so they'll do some solo numbers that they're well known for, you know, Sondheim and some of the pieces, classic Broadway, you know, Rodgers and Hammerstein, this sort of thing. But then also they know each other really well. They're friends. They love to perform together. So they'll do a number of duets and we'll have some really nice surprises in there as well. And they're singing with the Lyric Opera Orchestra. So it's really a beautiful evening. And if you love Broadway, classic Broadway, contemporary Broadway, this will definitely kind of scratch all those itches.
And you hit my heart. By the way, I fell in love with Brian Stokes Mitchell during COVID when he stood on his balcony.
Yeah.
And this guy, of course, got all over YouTube and whatever, and he would sing just for people down there to keep him happy.
Well, and that's what I mean. He's just, you know, that comes from who he is. He's such a generous performer. And Laura Benanti is the same way, absolutely. And, you know, also they're just great. You know, they're great actors. They're great with their comic timing. It's going to be a terrific evening.
And I do want to mention as well what is you're calling an alt rock masterpiece reborn. All I got to do is say the name Billy Corgan in Chicago. That's all I got to do.
So this came about. Billy has been coming to Lyric and performances for years. And last season we did a performance of Mozart's Requiem. So, you know, big classic piece for the chorus, four operatically trained singers, the orchestra, everybody on stage. And whatever happened during that performance, something clicked for him. And he said, I want to do that with Melancholy and the Infinite Sadness, like the classic Smashing Pumpkins album, celebrating its 30th anniversary this coming fall. And, you know, we managed to connect. We loved the idea. And so it really is getting the operatic treatment. It'll be for the same forces as the Mozart Requiem, but also with Billy singing along with the orchestra and the chorus and these four wonderful soloists, many of whom have been here at Lyric before, all, you know, highest level international opera stars coming to perform for this. And, you know, I say seven nights only. It's seven nights only. This is the chance to see it. And we love that he wants to do this in Chicago, you know, the town that spawned the Pumpkins, that now this music is gonna take the stage at Lyric in this completely new reimagining. Could not be more excited about something than this. And it is, talk about selling fast. I mean, it is really selling well. So if this is something you're excited about, get your ticket now.
Yeah, you're always a step ahead of me. I was just about to say, I looked at the website for those nights. Unbelievable. They're going really well. Do not sit back and say, I think I'll think about it. And that's November 21st through the 30th. And by the way, sitting there, will it be the feeling of I'm at a Smashing Pumpkins concert or, oh, I'm in the Opera House? What's the feeling going to be, do you think?
Well, you know, the crowd is going to kind of set the tone, right? And it's really funny. I've done shows that are adjacent to this before I've been involved in, and you might do them over a three-night run or a four-night run or something, and one night everybody comes in and like the atmosphere of the Opera House gets them thinking and they sit quietly and listen respectfully, and then the next night everybody's up and cheering, and so, you know, it's kind of up to the crowd to set the tone.
Well, it's a Chicago. It's his town. Tell him also to bring the neon sign his wife got him from the Orange Garden restaurant, would you? Because I will.
I don't know about that, but I will ask and we'll see what happens.
He'll know just what I'm talking about. I promise you that. Just going to be fantastic. Billy Corgan, the Lyric opening concert, an unbelievable season ahead. A little bit about you, because my understanding is You actually, your degrees are in history. You've got a master's, you went to UCLA. When did that, was history always the route to music, or did something click in your mind?
Yeah, so I went all the way through my PhD at UCLA and actually studied history and musicology, and my doctoral dissertation was about 18th century Italian opera, and worked as a freelancer for LA Opera, and then moved over to the orchestra world where I worked for nearly 30 years, and then found my way back to my first love, opera, with this incredible position at Lyric.
Amazing. And the background is just amazing. So look, I want to talk a little bit about opera because if some people watching are like me, they want to be, I call it classy because I just think when you go to the opera, you're kind of classy. But the thing is, when you go to Lyric, at least I think years ago, you didn't get translations. You didn't get, there were things that didn't happen that made the opera a more comfortable experience maybe for going. And I'm just looking at some of the operas you're doing this season. I mean, Pagliacci in November. Salome, I said that right, in January 25th to February 14th. These are classics. So even somebody like me, I may want to say, I've never seen Pagliacci. I know I've listened to Luciano Pavarotti in some recordings, but I've never seen it. Talk to me about why today people who think they're not into opera really do need to give it a try. Maybe I'm wrong, but I think it's a different experience than it was 50 years ago.
Yeah, it's a complete. I mean, even I remember my first opera was 35 years ago now, and they didn't have translations. And there was if you were sitting in the back of the balcony, if you didn't remember to bring binoculars with you, you couldn't see anything. So, we really go out of our way to make sure that from the minute you walk into the opera house, you can have a great experience. There's different dining options here. We've got a restaurant opening on the street level that'll be open in time for the season called Eves, and it's kind of a bistro, casual kind of place. There's Florian up on the third floor where you can make a reservation for a more, fancier dinner, where you can, have your first course before the show, and then at intermission you can have dessert, and really, really some nice options in the opera house for that part of the experience. We've got bars and concessions, so if you want to go an even less formal route but have something to eat or drink at intermission, that's there for you. It's just a comfortable place. There's no specific dress code. We want you to come dressed appropriately, but appropriately is, jeans and a shirt if that's what you're
Well,
comfortable
you
with.
know what? I get it and I don't disagree with you, but I do look at how people are dressed when I go to the opera house. I want to give them a little credit because, yes, there are people. I'm not going to say there's nobody in shorts because that happens too, but there is a little higher standard, I think, that many people bring when
Oh,
they go to the opera.
people will choose to take it as a chance to really, get dressed up and pull out all the stops. And we had a thing last season which was really fun around Marriage of Figaro. We told people to wear old wedding dresses and wedding suits and tuxedos and stuff. And some of the dresses that turned out that night were incredible.
Oh,
So,
I love that.
yeah, people get into it and have a lot of fun. And we have translations over the stage. So if the opera, whether it's in English or not, we still put the text up in English so that you can really follow everything that's going on in the story. There's good stuff on the website that can help get you acclimated. And some of the operas, like Salome, is a great example. It's shorter than most movies. So you come in and it's 100 minutes long and it's incredibly compelling drama. And this production is spectacular. It's the first time it'll be in the United States. It's a production from the Royal Opera House in London, making its US premiere this coming season, early next year. It's if you enjoy great drama at the movies or on TV, this is right up your alley. And
And then,
Pagliacci is another great example. Madama Butterfly at the end of
that's what I was going to bring
the
up, Madama Butterfly. I saw
yeah
that on the schedule. I mean, it's like these are the hits of all time this season.
yeah and they're great ways to come to the opera for the first time. The other thing is we do new work as well. So like we close the season with a new piece by a composer, Gabriel Elena Franck, and Pulitzer Prize winning playwright Nilo Cruz, called The Final Dream of Frida and Diego, about Frida Kahlo and Diego Rivera. And the hope there is that people interested in the visual arts, maybe people who've been to the Frida show over at the Art Institute this spring, will come back and experience another facet or another take on those artists in this opera that we're doing. So we're always trying to think of, what are all the ways in for people?
It's also, and it's way in the future, but I mean, also on the agenda is a Sunday in the Park. presentation. But I think that's it.
So that's actually the first thing. We do that September 7th.
Of this year.
Yeah, of this year.
Oh, I misread that. I thought it was going next year.
No, it's the first thing we do every year, and it's kind of a preview of some of the things coming up in the new season, and then just some of the greatest hits that even if you've never been to the opera or you think you don't know opera, these are pieces that have so permeated popular culture that you will recognize them the minute you hear them.
God, see, it came at the end of the brochure, so I put it at the end of the, yeah. The calendar in my mind. I don't think I'm putting you on the spot, but you said it, so I want to ask you. You said in the old days, if you sat in the balcony, you better bring your binoculars and stuff. So now I have to ask you. It sounded like you have a fix for that. What is the fix for people?
It's just that the performances with the texts and with the staging are so much more intimate, and you can connect to them so much more. Ah. I mean, when I first went, that it really was each singer came out, and yeah, they had a costume on and things, but they sort of sang their aria and then they got off the stage. And you know, the directors that we work with here at Lyric focus so much on the drama and the theatrical aspect, and the singers are so beautifully trained in all of this that just the power of what's coming off the stage, that energy, you know, moves across that space. But you know, if you want to, you can still bring your binoculars. So it's a great experience.
When you do an opera, when you present an opera, is there for example, The Goodman has Color Purple, and so when you go to see it, you go, oh, how is this different from other Color Purples? I get the sense that when it comes to opera, you have to be true to the way the piece was written, even though it may have been a couple of more centuries ago. Am I right or wrong about that? I mean, do your directors, you give them the freedom to say, hey, Pagliacci is yours, do what you will with it?
We do. We give them the freedom. I think a good example of this is, well, there's several good examples next season, but just going back to the Madama Butterfly, it is directed in such a way that the actual story is very much your traditional, you know, set in late 19th century Japan, Madama Butterfly, with the beautiful fabrics and costumes and lighting and sets and everything. But it's framed as, you know, an American guy going online and putting on VR glasses. And this is his kind of VR experience that he moves through in the opera. So it's like a new take on an old classic. And a lot of times we'll have productions that do that, so that, you know, if you're coming for the first time, you're getting the story told in a very straightforward way. But if it's your 10th Madama Butterfly, it's a new way of looking at it. So it keeps it fresh for the aficionados, but makes it really accessible for the new people.
This might be a stupid question, probably is, but for me, I always make a connection when there's a Broadway version of something that was an opera. So I think of course, Madama Butterfly, which was M. Butterfly on Broadway, but also La Boheme, Rent. I mean, does the Lyric, do you play with that connection at all? Do you say we could or should do this because there are Broadway people who have been seeing this show and we should tap into that? Does that work?
Absolutely. La Boheme's a perfect example. You know, that was a bestseller in the season that we just finished, and that Rent connection, but also La Boheme itself, you know, directed by Baz Luhrmann, who did the Moulin Rouge film and the Romeo and Juliet with Leonardo DiCaprio and Claire Danes. You know, he did a long-running Broadway production of La Boheme as well. So it's really out there, again, among people who may not have ever been to the opera but are big Broadway fans. They'll know La Boheme is a title, Rent is a title, and there's that connection. And we absolutely, you know, talk about that in our marketing and, you know, blog posts and things we do on Facebook and stuff like that.
And I think when you talk about sound systems and sound, there's sort of a couple of different worlds here, with all due respect to the Broadway shows, because I love them. But, you know, they better be mic'd properly and you better have it working, because you may not hear them. But am I right? And I don't know if it's Lyric and auditorium, but that I think you folks are sort of acoustically perfect, that, I mean, they don't need to wear microphones. Is that true?
That's absolutely right. So the singers at Lyric are not mic'd. The orchestra isn't mic'd. For Broadway, we will mic the singers and the orchestra and get the mix. But for the opera titles, it's all not mic'd. And hearing a human voice fill a 3,200 seat theater, which is about as close to acoustically perfect as you get when it comes to these venues. It is a beautiful sound and it supports the orchestra and the singers. So again, whether you're sitting in the front row or sitting in the balcony, you feel like they're right there in front of you, which I think is really a wonderful effect.
I do want to just ask another Broadway question, if you don't mind. And I saw Fiddler on the Roof several seasons ago. It was the most interesting, unique, different version of Fiddler on the Roof, and I've seen it 890 times. It was amazing. And I'm sort of curious, when you do take on those seasons, when you say we're going to take on a Broadway show, is it Fiddler will bring him in? Or do you start off by saying maybe to the director, no, this can't be any Fiddler. This, we're doing it at the Lyric, and this needs to be different, because that blew me away that season.
Well, and that's exactly right. So, of course, we start with a title that's going to have broad appeal, because, you know, we want people to turn out for it. But because it's at Lyric, we have to make sure that it is a really spectacular production, that it's not something that people have already seen before. You know, like you're saying, you've seen 800 Fiddlers. and I think there's a medal on its way to you in the mail for that.
Thank you.
But, you know, you don't want it to be, well, but yeah, the one I saw, you know, at Broadway in Chicago or when I was in New York was better, and that was just so. We want it to be the greatest experience you've ever had, and that's what we strive for, and that's how we pick the directors or the productions that we're going to use, whether it's opera or Broadway. It's the same lens that we're looking through.
You know, I think there's certain entities in the city that are just so important and classic to the city. And Lyric Opera for me is one of those, just one of those buildings that, you know, you're not on Randolph and Dearborn, you're not right in the middle of it all, a little bit, got to go to Wacker to get over to you. I guess I won't say what I think. I'll ask you, how important is the Lyric Opera of Chicago to the city of Chicago and our cultural life?
I think it's a cornerstone institution. I mean, I think of it in the same way that I think of the Art Institute, Chicago Symphony, you know, Goodman, Steppenwolf, these kinds of institutions, the big Broadway theaters, the Harris. There's kind of, you can say, okay, there's about 10 of these, and they're the places that make a city. You know, Chicago is special because it has the Lyric, the Art Institute, the theaters, so on and so forth. They're the things that define the city's character, and they're also institutions that are doing work or creating spaces that allow us to do work that reflect our city in some way. So we can, you know, we can bring in particular artists from Chicago, whether they're singers or creators. Billy Corgan's a great example, and do something with them. You know, it wouldn't be the same if Billy Corgan was doing this project in Los Angeles or in Seattle or something like that. I mean, it would still be very special, but he's doing it at home in his home theater at Lyric. And that's the kind of institutions that give a city its special cultural character. Also, I will say, this is the most beautiful, stunning, large opera house in the United States and among the most beautiful anywhere in the world. I mean, the minute you walk through the glass curtain into the main lobby with those columns and the granite and the marble and the Art Deco sconces and chandeliers, and then into the theater with the beautiful decoration, I mean, you're already just transported and uplifted by your surroundings, and you haven't even heard a note of music yet. So it's really an incredible, special place.
See, I'm going to massage one of the things you said. You won't disagree with me, but if you told me, oh yeah, Billy Corgan, he's performing and he's over at the Goodman, gave him the stay. The Goodman's a great theater. I'm not saying anything negative, but what I am saying is, when I read that it's in the Lyric, anytime I read something is in the Lyric Opera House, for me, that's just a special night is on its way. There's something about that building, that environment. You've been talking about it, but so it's not even Billy Corgan if he was in LA. I mean, it could be in the Hollywood Bowl. It's not the same experience. And when you're at the Lyric, there's something special. And if viewers have not experienced it, you need to just go experience that building.
Amen.
Can I ask you what, you know, when you were interviewing for the job and you had been in Houston for several years, the Houston Symphony, I've been to Houston, but I've never been. If there's a symphony building, I haven't been in it. What attracted you? Why did you want this job?
I mean, number one, Chicago. Incredible city. I just love this city. I said to someone during the interview process, just being in the back of the Uber, driving in from the airport, seeing the skyline.
That should have been enough to turn you off in the back of the, I'm sorry.
No, you're inspired. You think, okay, this is a place where great things are going to happen, this city. So, you know, I love Chicago. And the Lyric is, for people that don't know, it is one of the world's great opera houses. It is a legendary place where every great artist in the opera field has stood on the boards of the stage and sung for Chicago audiences for almost 75 years. So it has this incredible history. And to be asked to be part of a group of people that steward that and envision what the future of that looks like is just an incredible privilege. I loved working in Houston. The orchestra there is great. They have a beautiful concert hall where they play. It's a wonderful city and community. But, you know, you kind of in the back of your mind dream about what is the big thing I'm going to do in my life. And for me, this is it. So it's just, you know, a great special joy for me.
Yeah. And I'll tell you, I've been on the stage of the auditorium, believe it or not, to perform a little bit. But aside that, it did strike me too, the people who have stood on that stage over the decades and decades. What year was the Opera House built? And I mean, I know I could say names like Pavarotti. I know he was there. But I mean, when you think back to the history, do you know a name or two? You could say, hey, this will floor you. That somebody.
Yeah. So the Opera House was built in 1929. And open right on top of the stock market crash.
Yeah.
The original model was there was a power plant in the basement and the office tower above us, and the money from rent from the office tower and from power sold from the power plant was going to pay for the opera. Well, that all went out the door with the Depression. And really, there wasn't an opera company that stuck in Chicago until well after World War II. So Lyric was founded in 1954, and we've been here in this building now for more than 70 years as the opera company. And, you know, we own the opera house and the office space and the backstage space that we need to do our work. Some of the great singers, I mean, you mentioned Pavarotti, Placido Domingo is another one, another name that everybody knows. Our opening night performance was Bellini's Norma, sung by Maria Callas, who is like one of the legendary divas of all time. The Angelina Jolie movie came out last year, you know, biopic of her. Dame Joan Sutherland, Leontine Price. I mean, you name any great singer, and they have been on the stage here.
Looking forward, for an opera, do you sometimes look, here's a great opera person, we want that person, we'll figure the show out at that point? Or is it, we pick the show, who can we get, or who will we be able to go after?
So it happens both ways. I mean, there might be a show we love, like a Carmen or a Barbara Seville or something, and we say, okay, we've got to do Carmen, and then we cast it. But there might also be a singer that we're really excited about, and so we start by asking when they're available and what repertoire they're interested in singing, and, you know, hope the stars align and that they're available in the not too distant future, and that what they want to do is something that will really appeal to audiences here in Chicago. So it can happen both ways.
Are those stars as excited to come to the Lyric? Maybe they haven't been here before, but even if they have, is return to the Lyric or coming to the Lyric something that they find special in their career?
They love being at the Lyric. I mean, they know the history of the place and the people that have sung here. And also, we talk about the Lyric family. We really go out of our way to try to cultivate a good working atmosphere for our guest artists, you know, just welcoming, supported, making sure that they enjoy their time in Chicago. Because when they're here, even if the performances only run for a couple of weeks, they're here 6 or 7 weeks because they have rehearsals and preparatory work, you know, music rehearsals, staging rehearsals that lead up to the opening. And we want them to really love their time here in Chicago. So we do what we can to make that happen.
Well, before I let you go, I just want to visit the restaurants one more time. And I'll be honest to our viewers who are watching us here, I tried to get this into the first part of the show on the TV end, and I just ran out of time. I'm so glad you brought it up. But Eve, so I've been to Flory, and I've been to the restaurants there, the kind of the dessert place that's along the front of the building. I've gone in there. But Eve's will be new for me. I've seen some pictures of it. You described it as very casual and such. The pictures look like it was, maybe a step above casual. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I mean, it's Eve's at the Peterson Room is the formal name. For many years, we had a sort of space down there on the street level called the Peterson Room, and Eve's is using that space.
Oh, so you're in the space I probably have been in.
Yeah, you may have been in there because there'll be if you're looking at the main entrance of the building,
yeah.
On one side there will be the coffee shop, espresso and milk, and on the other side, Eve's at the Peterson Room.
Okay, I have been in that space. So
yeah, and you know the space is elegant. I mean, it matches the elegance of the opera house, I find.
Yeah,
and you know, lots of gilt work in the ceilings and rich woods and things like that. But the menu is a little more, say, relaxed. So it's kind of a bistro menu with pastas and small plates and things like that. And then also they have a spectacular bar with some really special vintages of wine, bourbon, whiskey, this kind of thing. So if you're really interested in old wines and cocktails and rare spirits, it's I think going to be a really interesting place to be, and it's going to be open on weekdays, and then we'll be open on performance days on the weekends as well
for dinner, so we could have dinner before the show.
Exactly, so you can pop in there and have a bite before, and you know, also for most shows their opening hours will encompass them being open afterward for a drink as well, which is going to be really nice.
Well, John Mangum, I can't thank you enough. I wanted to do this interview because, as I said, I gave you my faults up front as far as my experience with opera. But you excite me about it. I feel like, no, I need to try and go back to those kinds of things. But the other things you do, there is nobody who shouldn't make their way to the Lyric Opera House, because there's something for everybody at this point. You folks have really learned how to tap into, I think, the pulse of the city and say, hey, it's 2025 and people have all sorts of different interests, and nothing should keep you away from this building, this classic building that is known for doing such incredible classical things, but at the same time is playing to the needs, the desires, and the times in which we live.
Yeah, that's great. And everyone in Chicago should feel like this is their opera house and they are welcome here. We want them to join us.
The website is lyricopera.org. You know, I'm going to just say this again. Mary Poppins playing on April 10th and 11th. I can't wait for that. Coco, October 18th and 19th. Will you have Lin-Manuel Miranda? He be hanging in the audience, maybe?
Anything's possible.
Okay. It's a positive. And of course, Billy Corgan, going to be amazing, November 21st to 30th. And as I said, he could say he's doing this somewhere else, but it's not going to be the experience that he or we will have here. And it all kicks off with the opening concert, Brian Stokes Mitchell, Laura Benanti. That is amazing, putting that together. I know there's people on your team and all that, but you're with me now and you're the head of the thing. Congratulations to you on putting together what will be an upcoming amazing season with great appeal.
Well, thanks very much, Paul. Really appreciate the time today, and it was great to talk with you.
Thank you. Thanks, everybody, for watching us here on Paul Listening Behind the Curtain. We'll see you next time.